Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Go Tigers. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia. I know I didn't watch the game. I started to watch the game and I couldn't watch the game because every time I watched the game, LSU started sucking. And you know, like Moses would raise his hands in the air, and as long as he kept his hands in the air, the Israelites would win. I had to turn the game off because if I watched the game, they would lose. And if I didn't watch the game, they would win, and I knew it. And every time I turned on the game, they had a setback. Joe Burrow at one point got hurt. I couldn't watch the game. I had to turn it off. I had to actually stay up and wait for the text alerts from all the wire services to tell me they had won. I knew they would win. Listen, I respect the sovereignty of God. I understand that he is in control, but I also understand that God has a sense of humor, and in his sovereign will, if I watched, they would lose, and if I didn't watch, they would win. And by God, they won. 42-25, LSU beat Clemson. It is a great – listen, those of you who are Clemson fans, Nikki Haley – if you're listening this morning, she was trash talking me last. Nikki Haley's a very good friend of mine, has been a very good friend of mine for a very long time. She's trash talking me last night, though. LSU won, Nikki. LSU won. We should have placed. See, here's the problem. Several people said Nikki and I should have placed bets. We should have done something. I knew she would wind up making me cook or something. But I couldn't place the bet because my kids actually like Nikki Haley more than me. And so they would have gone with Nikki, not with me. They would have been rooting against their grandfather's team. My dad is a huge LSU fan, lives in Louisiana. Joe Burrow, what a quarterback. Maybe the best college quarterback to play the game. Broke a record in number of touchdowns for a season. Just what an incredible guy. I asked Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska this morning. I sent him an email. I put it on Twitter, but I know he didn't use Twitter anymore, so I had to email Ben Sasse and say, would you please draft a resolution in the Senate to commend Nebraska for deciding they didn't want Joe Burrow back in the day. Burrow's dad went to Nebraska, and Burrow wanted to go to Nebraska. Nebraska said they weren't interested. So he went to Ohio State. Ha, pig farmer, if you're listening. Ha! Went to Ohio State, and they decided he was the backup quarterback. He didn't want to be the backup, so he went to LSU. Had a somewhat unremarkable season his first year. And then look at this. And now the Heisman winner wins the National Football Championship. You know, he doesn't even go to class at LSU. He doesn't even know his way around campus. He does online work. He's working on his master's at LSU. The people who are on the football team with him says some of them don't even know where he lives. He's got an apartment. He spends his day watching documentaries, playing Xbox, and watching football teams. Of course he does. The guy's like football monk. Which is fascinating. How can you go to LSU and not be okay? I have to be careful what I say here. We can't give away too many secrets of my college days, but I am from Louisiana. I went to Mercer here in Macon, where I am. Met my wife at Mercer. Our roommates were engaged. My roommate decided he was gay, so it didn't work out for them. It worked out for my wife and me. We were the ones who had cars and drove our roommates around until they broke up. We wound up getting married. My third year in law school, we started dating again. My wife moved back to Carrollton. I would go home during the summer, and my best friend lived in a fraternity house at LSU. I spent many a night. And you know, back then the drinking age was still 18 in Louisiana, and by the time they raised it to 21, I had a great fake ID. Not that I would confess that on national radio, but nonetheless, I would go to LSU. I have so many good memories of spending time on campus at LSU. It is an incredible place, and I never transferred back. Never wanted to move back to Louisiana. It had all sorts of problems, but it is a wonderful place. I love taking my kids to Louisiana. We don't get there enough to see my family, but I do love LSU. I like Georgia, too. And my wife's family, they're all Georgia Tech people. But I got a soft spot for LSU. I spent so much time on that campus never going to class. I have many memories, some of which maybe one day will resurface. But hey, I love it. It was great. But I couldn't watch the game because I knew they would lose. It was kind of funny watching them in the first two quarters of that game last night, seeing so many people start trash-talking the SEC. They always want to trash-talk the SEC. When someone from the – they're always convinced the SEC is actually overrated, that Alabama actually isn't as good as it has been, that LSU isn't that good. They want to trash talk them. And here came LSU with Clemson. And Clemson is such an incredible team. And Ogeron beat them. I swear, though, y'all – I shouldn't say I swear. I just think that they had that promo video for LSU last night. And they really should have had Ogeron do it. I think you got to come to the way. LSU is a team for champions team. LSU, come drunk on campus at the Dockery Bar and hang out on LSU, and you're going to have a blast, and you will get a prestigious college degree. It would have been fantastic if he did the voiceover. All right, we will move on. I have a really big announcement as we start the program. My Slacker call screener is back from killing hogs in Florida. So we can actually take your phone calls today because he's actually working. I see the phone lines are open, the phone number is available, and you actually can call the program today, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you call, you should ask him how many vacation days he expects to take this year. 877-973-7425. Oh, he's listening too. Okay. We got to get on to real news, and I want to start with a somber note of real news that is not fully in the headlines, but it probably should be. Right now, it is 9:12 a.m. if you're listening to this live. My kids have a beloved teacher at their school, and I don't want to go into the details of everything, but they've got a beloved teacher at their school who has been called up to duty in Afghanistan for the second time. And I realized last night, my kids are really upset about it. And they asked me, why are we going to Afghanistan? And I don't really have an answer anymore for it. You used to be able to say we're going to Afghanistan because the Taliban was in charge. They had turned it into a terrorist safe haven, and they allowed the people who plotted 9/11 and brought down the World Trade Center and killed thousands of Americans. They allowed them to have a safe haven there. They helped fund them. They helped them plan and prepare the attacks on Americans. And so George W. Bush went into Afghanistan to take them out. Why are we still there? 19 years later, I don't have an answer for why we are still at war in Afghanistan. If you've read the Washington Post stories, you know, this is the damnedest thing about the American media cycle is so anti-Trump. If it was Donald Trump who had steered the rationale for being in Afghanistan toward a bunch of hooey, it would still be a story. But the Washington Post came out with that sensational story about the Obama administration essentially lying and members of the military lying to justify our presence in Afghanistan still. And it fell on deaf ears, and the media immediately pivoted to something else because it actually didn't make the Trump administration look bad. It made the Obama administration look bad. If nothing else, it made the Trump administration look like suckers because it was bureaucrats within the Pentagon trying to justify our existence in Afghanistan, trying to convince President Trump to stay in Afghanistan when President Trump actually wants to leave Afghanistan. It was actually tremendous to see, to watch, to note that it is the bureaucracy within the Pentagon trying to dissuade President Trump from leaving. It was the Obama administration that wanted to actually stay. It was Obama-era bureaucrats put in place who did this, and the media can't hang their hat on that. Now, certainly there were problems going back to the Bush administration. The Bush administration is where it began, the end of the Bush administration. We had lost our way in Afghanistan. But we've never refound our way. There's never been a defined victory in Afghanistan. We have a new government set up, and that government is super corrupt and seems to have no ambition to clean up its corruption. And so we have no rational purpose to stay in Afghanistan if that government is not going to really take our help and reform itself. And I don't have a good explanation to my kids why their beloved teacher is going to have to go to Afghanistan on another tour. And I don't know that anyone else has that reason. I don't know that anyone in the government can provide that reason. And that's really disappointing. I supported President Bush doing what he did. At the time, it was justified. The Taliban in charge had turned Afghanistan into a safe haven for Al-Qaeda, where they could be funded, trained, and operate to launch terror cells around the world and to take on the United States directly with the USS Cole, the bombings in Africa, and ultimately the World Trade Center. It made sense to go in and blow them to smithereens. But that was 20 years ago. Why are we still there? I don't know that anyone has the answer. And I don't know what to tell my kids. In fact, last night when my kids were asking me about this, they're in an assembly right now at school for their teacher who is leaving. Today is his last day. And when they asked me last night, I said, we went into Afghanistan because the government there was bad and had given safe haven to terrorists and allowed them to train and fund them so that they could kill thousands of Americans, and they did it. And we went in and we took out that government. And then my 14-year-old daughter says, well, why are we still there? And I said, we're still there because the people of Afghanistan have been unable to take up arms and finish the job of eradicating both the former government members and the terrorists. And so we need to be there to help them. And that was the best I could do. And thankfully, she didn't ask more questions of how long is it going to be? How long is it going to take? At what point do we decide enough is enough? I've been there for a while, that enough is enough. 20 years on, we still haven't got the job done. The military makes it very clear we actually don't have a rationale for being there. And you talk to not just enlisted now, but officers who are serving in Afghanistan. You know, I grew up in the Middle East. My family served as a place for the enlisted in the 5th Fleet to come and relax whenever they would come into dry docks in Dubai. Our house overflowed with sailors for 10 years. My oldest sister wound up marrying a sailor. We had a lot of military personnel in and out of our house, and I know the enlisted always have strong opinions. When you get to the officer corps in the Middle East now, and in Afghanistan, it's not really even the Middle East, Afghanistan, they have strong opinions now, very strong opinions as well, and none of them really think we're in a winnable situation there. We're in a preserve the status quo situation, and that's just not good enough. And President Trump has said he wanted to get us out of Afghanistan, and maybe now is the time for him to start considering doing that as we head towards the election year next year. The Democrats are going to make it a political issue anyway, so let the president preempt them with it.
Well connected and well respected. It's Eric Erickson, live every weekday.
If you want to call into the program, my slacker culture who tells me he's taking off the same day I'm taking off, he's taking off. How is this even possible? Poor Alan Sanders is going to be filling in for me on the 24th while I'm in L.A. For HBO. He's going to be flying solo. The phone number, if you want to call in and give him a hard time, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Is the phone number. So, yes, I got to go back to the national championship game last night. Vince Vaughn, the actor, was there. He was seen on video enjoying a conversation with the President of the United States and First Lady. For those of you who don't know, Vince Vaughn is a Trump-supporting Republican. And he's been very open about the fact that he likes the president and is a Republican. And they're giving him, they're trying to cancel him on social media now. They are trying to get people to boycott Vince Vaughn films and not watch it. I don't know when the last time Vince Vaughn has been in a project. We should find this. Vince Vaughn. We should find when is Vince Vaughn. When's his next project? He's got a couple of things coming out this coming year. They're in post production. We will see. But he hadn't had a ton of stuff out there of late. But he's got a couple of things coming out this year. So there you go. Yes, cancel culture for Vince Vaughn for daring to be seen with the President of the United States last night. This reminds me of the left-wing freakout over Ellen hanging out with George W. Bush. How dare she hang out with George W. Bush? The audacity of hanging out with George W. Bush. Poor old Ellen had to apologize. But also say that she was willing to have friends who she might disagree with. Good for her. I think we need to have more people who are willing to disagree. Okay, we can move on from all of this now. Your phone calls 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, we need to talk about impeachment. Before we talk about impeachment, I got to play this audio for you. I bookmarked this yesterday. I intended to play it yesterday, and I should have played it yesterday because I would have been ahead of the curve because it's blowing up right now. This is John Kerry on Face the Nation. They asked him about the Iran deal, and they threw his old quotes in his face. Listen to this.
Everything that's happened in the last days.
Going on the attack on that deal this morning, specifically mentioning you, perhaps not a surprise. But, you know, I know the deal you negotiated lifted sanctions, gave some relief in exchange for capping the nuclear program. There was also a parallel negotiation that released some cash as part of a settlement of a different, separate dispute. The president this week put blame on the administration. The administration you served on with essentially helping to provide money to the IRGC. I want to play a soundbite of what you said in 2016 to CNBC when you were asked about how Iran would spend the money.
I think that some of it will end up in the hands of the IRGC or of other entities, some of which are labeled terrorist. To some degree, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that every component of that can be prevented. But I can tell you this. Right now, we are not seeing the early delivery of funds going to that kind of endeavor at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure at some point some of it will.
I remember talking to you at the time. Money is fungible.
Sure.
Why, though,
Absolutely.
Did you
Money
think
is fungible.
That was a risk worth taking if you knew the possibility of what would happen with that money?
Well, what I was really saying, I think, first of all, Margaret, you are an expert at this. You were there. You know that the president's tweet is a lie. And the president tweeted this morning because I am coming on the show and he knew you'd ask me the question or he'd push you in a place where you did ask the question.
Notice how he's trying to flatter her and then suggest she's being used as a pawn of the president.
You and the media, I think, need to call a lie a lie. You know
Mr.
they
Secretary,
didn't get $150
billion. I asked you that question in 2015, too.
No, but let me just finish. You know, yes, and I'll answer that. I was saying clearly some money from the budget of Iran is going to go to the IRGC. It always has. That's no surprise. But the truth is, and President Trump, he probably doesn't know this, but the fact is his own Defense Intelligence Agency in 2017 testified to the Congress that very, very little money actually went to the IRGC at all. Most of the money went to the economy of Iran, which is precisely what I said and what we all said. So the IRGC has never had a problem getting money, Margaret. But the fact is, Donald Trump keeps saying they got $150 billion, a lie. He keeps saying that all of that money went to pay for it. It did not. His own Defense Intelligence Agency says most of the money went for the economy of the country. So, you know, we have to stop dealing with questions on Donald Trump's lies.
Wow. Money is fungible. So you mean they put money into Iran's economy and the money that was being put into Iran's economy went to the IRGC? That's essentially what he's saying. So in other words, they did make it possible to fund the IRGC. He doesn't want to admit it, but he just did on national television. And he's having a meltdown now about it. The Democrats are having a meltdown about it, but it's the truth. The Obama administration helped fund the Iranian army. This hour of this year program is sponsored by the fine folks at First Liberty of Georgia. FirstLibertyGA.com is their website. If you are connected to a small or medium-sized business and you want to help them grow to be a big business and you don't want to deal with bank bureaucracy, First Liberty of Georgia is who you need to talk to. They can help you get the capital needed to grow your business. Go to FirstLibertyGA.com. Talk to my friends, the Frost family. Be sure to let them know that I sent you. Give me some credit for connecting you to them and help them as they have helped me sponsoring this program. Thank you very much to First Liberty of Georgia. I want to move into impeachment now. I got to be honest with you. Let me be honest. I don't care about impeachment. And I realize, see, this is the problem. So when I was at CNN, I was at CNN for 3 years, and one of my bosses there, I actually tweeted out one night and I said, I'm not watching. This was in 2012. And I tweeted out, I'm not watching the Democratic debate. I have no interest in it. Or which way? I can't remember what it was. It was one of the Republican debates in 2012. It was, I'm not watching the Republican debate. I'm out with my wife and kids. And we're not going to learn anything new. And one of my bosses at CNN reached out to me and he said, just this is my personal advice. He says, no harm, no foul, but you as a pundit should never publicly say this because it is your business to care about these things. And if you're not going to watch, don't tell people you're not going to watch. And I thought, you know, I get the merit because I would inevitably be on TV the next day having to talk about it. And here I am on social media saying I didn't watch it. And of course, I would go back and watch the relevant clips and everything to be able to react and respond. But I had no interest in watching it. There's a Democratic debate tonight and I have no interest in watching it. And I have no interest in impeachment. And the media is upset that Americans don't care about it. You are being browbeaten by the American Press Corps for not actually caring about impeachment. Most of you do not care about impeachment. At this point, most of you think it's time to move on. Here's Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee.
This really is impeachment with an asterisk. It is a failed strategy. It has been that way from the start because they said they were going to find something, they were going to impeach him. And Nancy Pelosi has done nothing but dig herself further in the hole. I was thinking about that Randy Travis song, The Hole, today. You know, the deeper you go, you affect your futures. And that is exactly what she is doing. And I don't see where there is a win in this for her. I was in East Tennessee this weekend. People are sick and tired of this. They're saying, get on with the business of the USMCA. We're ready for China trade. We want to make certain that we're securing that southern border. Those are the questions that they're asking.
It's true. Even among the Democrats, there was polling of Democratic primary voters, and impeachment was not in the top five issues they care about. The only people who care about impeachment are the media. And the media wants you to fixate on impeachment like they are. And the reason they want it, listen, at this point, it is a foregone conclusion that Donald Trump is not actually going to be convicted in an impeachment trial. And yes, a buddy of mine texting me, he thought that Marsha Blackburn said exactly what I thought she said. Some of you listened and you thought the same thing my buddy Britt and I thought that Marsha Blackburn said. She did not say that. She said digging a hole. I thought it was just me. In any event, let's go to Mitch McConnell.
The House ignored us at the time. They rushed ahead to meet a political timetable. But now they've spent almost a month conceding that their own case does not stand on its own and searching for ways to supplement it from the outside. This is exactly the kind of toxic new precedent that many of us warned about back in December. That Speaker Pelosi's House was not sending the Senate a thorough investigation. They were just tossing up a jump ball and hoping that the political winds might blow things their way. So here we are. The Senate was never going to pre-commit ourselves to redoing the prosecutor's homework for them, and we were never going to allow the Speaker of the House to dictate Senate proceedings to senators. House Democrats have already done enough damage to the precedent, to national unity, and to our institutions of government. The Senate will not be sucked into this precedent-breaking path. We will fulfill our constitutional duty. We will honor the reason for which the founders created this body, to ensure our institutions and our republic can rise above short-term factional fever. The House has done enough damage. The Senate is ready to fulfill our duty.
Well, part of the problem for the Republicans, and this is why the media really cares, is because they're hoping that there will be a wild card. They're hoping there will be some level of unpredictability, because you do have some Republicans like Cory Gardner and Susan Collins who are in tough re-election fights, who may want to stand up and defy Mitch McConnell. Nothing happens in the Senate that surprises Mitch McConnell at this point. As someone who regularly fought him and was regularly beaten by him, McConnell plays the Senate well, and he's willing to give wide latitude to people like Gardner and Collins to keep them happy and keep them looking independent so that they can get reelected, which plays to this point by Senator Menendez.
A number of Republican senators indicated today that they were not in favor of a motion to dismiss impeachment, with one Republican saying there's almost no interest among all Republicans to do that. We also heard Senator Romney say he wants witnesses to be called at the trial. Do you think those are actual breaks in Republican ranks, or just, you know, moderate Republicans kind of giving themselves a little wiggle room?
I think they're listening, hopefully, to the polls, where two-thirds of all of the American people want to see, for example, former National Security Advisor Ambassador Bolton testify. People like the president's chief of staff, Mulvaney, testify. And there's a difference between wanting to hear from them. They can guarantee, by voting to have witnesses, a small but very definite number of witnesses that can shed real light on what transpired here so we can come to an honest decision, would be critical. They have the power in their hands. Either we will get witnesses because Republicans who are being patriots and not partisans will join us to have witnesses. And if we don't have witnesses, it will be because Republicans wanted a whitewash and not a real transparent trial.
But here's the problem with the witness argument is the House of Representatives could have called more witnesses and they chose not to. And do the Democrats really want to go down this road? Because Rand Paul is pointing out that if you call witnesses and the witnesses aren't the witnesses who testified in the House, then Republicans get to call witnesses, too. The president's going to have a fair trial. The president's going to get due process. The president's going to be allowed to call witnesses as well. And one of those witnesses may have the last name Biden. And by the way, Quinnipiac polling is out. It shows that 57% of Americans approve of the president's handling of the economy, and 75% of Americans want Hunter or Joe Biden to testify in the impeachment trial. A majority of Democrats, a majority of Republicans, and a majority of independents all want the Bidens to be witnesses in the president's impeachment trial. Over to you, Adam Schiff.
But if it is a fair trial, though, you could very well see the case where the Bidens would have to be there.
Yes.
You think that is a good thing politically? You think that's a good thing for impeachment as a whole?
I think what the senators would have to evaluate is, do the Bidens have any relevant testimony? Right. And I think the answer is that they don't. What is at issue here is whether the president withheld military aid, withheld official acts like a White House meeting in order to coerce a country to announce investigations, not even conduct them, but just announce them to help smear his opponent. And there's not much light that Joe Biden or Hunter Biden can shed on the president's conduct.
Yeah, right. Let's say that Joe and Hunter Biden, and in particular Hunter Biden's dealings in Ukraine, provide the president some level of alibi as to why he was engaging in Ukraine. The president claims that he was purely interested in the Democrats having covered up corruption by Hunter Biden. And the president claims he wanted to ensure that Ukraine was properly investigating corruption that related to Hunter Biden. Now, I don't think he should have done it. Had the president listened to his advisors and not done it, I mean, you know, this is kind of the funny thing about this presidency. Had the president listened to his advisors and not fired James Comey, we would have never had the independent counsel investigation. Had the president listened to his advisors and not raised the issue with Ukraine, we would not be in the midst of impeachment right now. Had the president listened to his advisors. But he didn't, and he did it, and now here we are. But the president's argument is that the Bidens were deeply corrupt and Joe Biden turned a blind eye to his son's corruption, and on it goes. And so he decided he had to ask Ukraine's president about it. That means that the president does have a reasonable basis to have the Bidens called up in the impeachment trial to probe Hunter Biden's corruption with Burisma in Ukraine. Why? Because, specifically, Hunter Biden was not qualified to be on that board. Hunter Biden had no business being on that board. His father had business related to Ukraine while he was on that board, and the president wants to establish that. There actually is a lot of evidence out there in the polling that suggests that voters in particular are not happy with the idea that Joe Biden's family profited off Joe Biden being in government. Say what you will about Donald Trump, and the left hates it when I point this out, but the fact is his family made a lot of money before he ever got into the White House. Joe Biden's family made no money until he was in government. In fact, that's all Joe Biden's ever done in government, and guess what? The rest of the family went into government, and they did quite well in lobbying and outside groups. That's a problem for Joe Biden. It is a problem because the American public does not like people to get enriched while being in government service. That is why the Democrats keep attacking Donald Trump for the Trump Hotel and all the Trump land deals. There's a deep level of irony here that the Democrats browbeat Donald Trump over the Trump Hotel in Washington and tried to send the G7 summit to the Trump golf course and all these other things. And they're like, pay no attention to Joe Biden's family doing all this business with companies and countries that Joe Biden was dealing with as vice president. Pay no attention to that. Look at the Trumps. And the Trumps are like, hey, we had our $1 billion before we even got here. They didn't have it until his dad became vice president. That actually is an Achilles heel for the Biden team, because as much as they've tried to make this about Trump's family benefiting off Trump being in office, Joe Biden's family benefited by Joe Biden being in office in ways Donald Trump's family didn't have to. And that's not a partisan point. It's not running interference for Trump to say that. It's actually the truth. So if we get to impeachment, see, the media thinks it's going to be some sort of ratings bonanza. You know, Brian Stelter on CNN is going to be running headlines about how many people have gotten the ratings for CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and how well they're going to be. And then they're going to attack Fox News for how Fox covered stuff that CNN and MSNBC didn't cover in a way they would never do to MSNBC. And they're hoping for ratings bonanza. And, you know, there will be a lot of partisans on the left who do watch, and there will be a ratings field day on it. But most Americans still don't care about it. Most Americans still want to deal with this at the ballot box. And I think the media at this point is more and more, you know, there's a one day I've spent a lot of time in the last several weeks pointing out stuff in the media. Like, for example, the New York Times says that the president decided to kill Soleimani because it was in a list of options and the military put it in there to make it the most radical one so that he wouldn't do it. And then he chose it. And now NBC News directly contradicts the New York Times by saying 7 months ago, Pompeo and Bolton wanted the president to do it and he deferred it until now. It directly contradicting each other. Meanwhile, they're all trying to say the president's contradicting himself. The only constant in any of this is that the president's team has all been consistent, saying that there was an imminent threat from Soleimani and they had to take him out to disrupt the planning for the imminent attack. Meanwhile, the media is going in multiple directions. I could do an entire show on how the media is trying to make you care about stuff, from global warming to impeachment to Soleimani, and every angle they take is anti-Trump. I could do an entire week's worth of shows on that. But in the here and now, impeachment is coming. There's going to be a trial. The articles of impeachment are supposed to go over today. They're going to announce impeachment managers from the House of Representatives later today. And nobody cares except the media. And they're going to do their best over the next several weeks to try to make you care passionately about it. And then they're going to tell you you're a bunch of morons for not caring about it when no one cares about it except the members of the press who think it's going to be a ratings bonanza and they're going to be able to pontificate on TV.
National connections, local focus. Eric Erickson is live every weekday.
The phone lines are open. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Our Action Center is also open, letting you reach out to your member of the General Assembly to tell them to push David Ralston out of office, to support David Clark, state representative, good, solid, conservative Republican, has the resolution. They have 10 people on it so far. To get David Ralston out of the speaker's chair to protect the GOP in 2020 and neutralize Democratic attacks. Ralston is a corrupting influence in the state house. If you want to lend your voice to tell your state representative to take a stand against him, text the word speaker to 52886. Text the word speaker to 52886. Stand with conservatives who are willing to take a stand against David Ralston. A lot of the squishy Republicans in the state legislature refuse to actually take on Ralston, not because they particularly care for him. They're actually kind of scared of him. But they don't understand the whole concept of strength in numbers, and they're afraid of getting punished along the way. So they won't stand up to Ralston, and somebody's got to stand up to Ralston, or the Democrats are going to use Ralston and his unethical antics as a way to beat the Republicans next year so they can be the ones to draw the redistricting maps. Somebody needs to take a stand. And I encourage my listeners to take it. I make it as, listen, you people complain, you moan all the time that you can't do anything, you can't have an impact, that nobody listens to you. I make it as easy as possible. As easy as possible. All you have to do is pick up your cell phone and text the number 52886, 52886. And the only word that you text to 52886 is the word speaker. And the Action Center goes into effect. It generates it'll ask you, send you a link. You'll click the link. It'll say, what's your zip code? You'll click your zip code. And boom, you'll start generating an email to your state representative. It'll even connect you to the state house switchboard, and it'll say, you'll hear my voice even. I'm going to connect you now to your state representative. Here's what you need to tell them. It's actually a really awesome system. You should actually do it just to actually try it and see that it's working right now. Text the word speaker to 52886. Become a conservative activist. Stop complaining that the legislature sucks. Stop complaining that the Speaker of the House sucks. And actually fire it up. Fire it up. Now, what is this? I'm being trolled by a friend of mine. Okay. Now, we need to move on to other stuff. We'll get back to the legislature here in a little while because they are meeting in Atlanta and they are looking at shaping up some of the new rules. It turns out, and you may not hear this a lot in the media, But it turns out that the president's border wall, Axios is reporting, is a win. It's actually a win. So, you know, the media's been pushing this story that the president wasn't getting new border wall, that he was just replacing existing border wall. A Washington Post reporter who lives along the border has actually done this very long Twitter thread that captured the attention of the the rest of the press corps. And he's put up a bunch of pictures and showing that the old border wall was essentially railroad ties that just blocked cars and they didn't block people. And the new Trump border wall is blocking people. Let me read you some stuff from Axios this morning as a result of that Twitter thread. The number of attempted border crossings is falling and the denial rates are climbing. The very nations most immigrants flee from are now the nations where asylum seekers are being sent. Over the past few months, the Trump administration has begun implementing its asylum agreements with Central American nations, which could help keep asylum seekers out of the U.S. They're sending Hondurans to Guatemala, the original state for the highest number of migrants who reach the U.S. Officials could begin kicking Mexican, Central American, and South American asylum seekers to Honduras or El Salvador, even if they're not from there, once the details of those agreements are worked out and put in motion. The final details of the Honduras agreement will be implemented soon. The Honduran Foreign Relations Minister has said the country agreed to accept migrants from Mexico, Brazil, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and El Salvador. The administration plans to remove Mexican asylum seekers to Guatemala. More than 50,000 Central American asylum seekers are already being forced to wait out their legal cases in Mexico. And then the wall reinforcements have prevented people from crossing the border. You didn't hear that in the media because they don't want you to know it's actually been a success. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I got to tell my friend Drew Ryan to stop texting me during the show. And when we come back, the legislature, they're meeting in Atlanta.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.